I gotta give it to you. That's, when explained like that, that is probably the first time the political correctness stuff has been explained to me, and it's made me go, that actually clicks.
Welcome to the podcast. My guest today is the delightful comedian Michael Schaefer. Michael's a talented guy. He finished high school ranked in the top 0.05% of his state. He then went on to study law and biomedicine. He finished those degrees and then ditched it all to become a stand-up comedian. He's been performing for about 8 years and is also a writer for The Project on Channel 10. Michael's been diagnosed with testicular cancer twice and is beaten it twice. He dedicated his entire 2019 Melbourne International Comedy Festival show to raising awareness about testicular cancer. His entire hour on stage at a comedy festival was about his battles with cancer. I'm always impressed when people are able to bring lightness to a dark place. You gotta have big ball for that. Enjoy the episode.
I always like saw class clowns, and I saw like people doing naughty shit and gone, that's funny, but I can't do that.
You're always like adjacent to it.
Yeah, I was very much adjacent to it. I wanted to do it, but I didn't have the balls to do it for a couple of reasons. Mainly, actually, at school, because my brother had like built this reputation of being like, you know, he was school captain and he was a good dude. So I felt like I had to live up to that. And then when I worked in corporate sales, I worked at the same company as my dad, and my dad was like this esteemed dude in the company. So I had to be this like very well behaved person.
Did you feel like you had to be that to protect their reputations, or did you feel like you had to be that because you wanted to be them?
Well, probably both, because yeah. Like I look up to my brother and my dad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't speak for you, but I wonder if it's, like, now that you've broken out of your, you know, you're not doing law, even though you did it, you decided not to do it.
Yes.
You decided to do your own thing, which isn't really, I don't want to say respected, but it's not really, like, understood by our community.
I would say not respected.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, the joke I told about, like, elderly Jewish people coming to my show and being like, why isn't he a doctor?
It's
exactly the mindset though.
It is.
That's the mindset of not just them, but like, just like everyone, pretty much everyone.
But
unless you're maybe like 21.
But is there something in you now that's like, all right, well, now that I am doing my own thing, I want to see how far I can push it.
Yeah, 100%. Well, yeah. I'm kind of like, I'm committed now. I'm kind of all in. I'm out on stage every night of the year, like gigging and trying. Like, I don't have just 50 minutes of like, honed material with callbacks and stuff.
Of course not. No, of course not.
You know, just by like doing it once and being like, oh yeah, that's fine.
That willingness to work to the degree that you work, I think is something that's very misunderstood. Actually, sorry, just before I continue, where am I taking you?
Oh yeah, well you're I was like, you're heading in the right direction.
So I was going in that direction, and then I'm like, I should probably ask.
I was like, you know, he's fucking nailing it already.
So I was talking to you. I was lost in conversation.
Just turn left at Danny Nongro when you get there.
That willingness to, like, I would say, work really fucking hard and do as many gigs as you can, either per night or per week or however you manage it.
Hmm.
I think that's something that's very misunderstood about, like, the life of a comedian.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was chatting with Lewis the other night, he actually brought you up about, you used to go, both of you used to do gigs, or maybe you still do, at a shisha bar.
I knew you were about to say that. That is so funny, yeah.
Mr. Shafiq.
With Mr. Shafiq, he's in the front row, and he followed me on Facebook after that.
Yeah.
And he sends me messages every now and again, which is very funny. Yeah. I mean, Lewis used to do that gig all the time. Fucked awful gig, but like,
yeah.
Man, I learned so much doing that gig out in Springvale to just like, you know, just Arabs who were just staring at me, smoking their shisha, 95% men, like just like hardly any women in the crowd.
Right.
And they're all just like, you better fucking be funny. And like, you know, it was really funny also doing Jewish material in that vibe. It was really, because like I felt like, oh, it felt like, you know, I was pushing boundaries there doing that material there.
Did they, like, I mean, doing Jewish jokes in that environment, first off, did they get it?
Yeah, they did. They oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Arabs understand. Arabs and Jews, like, we know each other well.
True. True. I mean, like, because Lewis said you had to adjust your name to Michael Shafar to be more relatable.
They kept introducing Michael Shafar, and they're like, is that because I sound more Arabic if you call it Shafar instead of Schaefer?
Oh, that's cold.
So funny. Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of working out, I used to, like, do, like, open mics. It was on a Tuesday night. It would start at 9 p.m. Mm. So I'll do the open mics in the north side. So I drive to, you know, Brunswick, Fitzroy, whatever, do, like, 2 or 3 gigs there when I could.
Yeah.
And then afterwards I would drive, you know, 45 minutes in that direction down, you know, the freeway and do that gig in Springvale. And just a bomb, turn left.
I think I'm going to keep going just to avoid fast roads and bad audio. How many gigs do you reckon you've done? Because you've been going for what, like 7, 8 years?
This is, I'll be coming up to my 7th year.
Okay.
It's so hard to say. I mean, thousands of gigs.
Yeah.
Thousands of gigs. You know, from, you know, 2 men and a dog in the back of a Vietnamese restaurant to, like, you know, theatres and stuff. Like, I think I've done
the whole...
I think I've done the whole spectrum of gigs.
I heard you say in an interview that political correctness is good for comedy.
Yeah, I think so.
That threw me a little bit. How?
It's something that I've realised is true.
Mm.
Because... I'll explain to you. So, think of a comedian like Anthony Jeselnik.
Okay.
Or do you know Anthony Jeselnik's stuff?
I know the name. I don't know if I can't
think. You know Bill Burr's stuff?
Yeah.
Let's use him as our example.
Yeah.
So, Bill Burr is... This is my understanding of Bill Burr. I think he's one of my favourite comedians.
Okay.
And I think about, you know, why is he so popular and so attractive? And it's because he has material that many people say is politically incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, you know, he talks about very taboo topics. He takes perspectives on issues and stances on issues that are very politically incorrect.
Right. Okay?
And that creates a lot of popularity for his comedy because he's not trying to be politically correct. He's deliberately just expressing his own views, and they happen to be very much politically incorrect.
Sure.
So without political correctness, he's got nothing to rebel against.
Okay.
The only reason he's politically incorrect is because of the existence of political correctness.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does, but...
If there was no political correctness, and everyone was just, like, happy to say... There was no, and everyone just took no offense at anything...
Yes.
Bill Burr's comedy basically wouldn't exist.
True. I mean, along the same train of thought, like, if the speed limit wasn't 60 kilometers an hour, I wouldn't be able to speed.
Exactly. That's exactly my point.
Which...
Speeding wouldn't exist if there were no speed limits.
True. But, like, that line of, like, should it be 60 here or should it be 40 or should it be 80? I mean, that's the...
You've created a fantastic analogy now to say, off like that.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful analogy.
Thank you.
Such a beautiful analogy.
I had a Red Bull before this one on.
No, you were fucking firing on all cylinders. I mean, if that doesn't get this viral, I don't know what will. That's a great... I mean, I think that's my starting position with political correctness is that it's good because it creates the existence of political incorrectness just by definition.
Mm.
But also, I understand that because of political correctness, there are some jokes that now are no longer fun.
Okay.
You know, particularly, I think, jokes that, you know, persecute a minority and those who are traditionally been disempowered, people will not laugh at that.
Sure.
And I think that's also good for comedy. I genuinely think that's also good for comedy. Some people say that's bad for comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good. I think it forces you to be a better comedian.
Okay.
Because I think it forces you... when there's more hoops and, like, boundaries and stuff you got to jump around, the best comedians will work out a way to get over those hurdles.
Yes.
And still talk about those topics and still make you laugh at them.
Yes.
Whereas the shitty comedians will complain and say political correctness is killing comedy. That's my understanding of the situation. So that's why I think it's better... For two reasons.
Mm.
Firstly, the existence of political correctness means that you can be politically incorrect and create an audience of people who want that type of comedy.
Sure.
And on top of that, if you do it well, you can actually do it in a way that isn't actually crook or mean or demeaning or degrading it, and is actually doing good for the world, despite it being politically incorrect.
That's very inspiring.
Okay.
That's very, very inspiring. Because
do you agree with that stance or do you disagree with that?
I absolutely agree with that stance. Okay. There's a YouTuber who doesn't earn any ad revenue from his videos, which is often like a starting point of income for a YouTuber.
Sure.
So then he had to get like very creative on how he would get brands involved and brands to spend more, or basically pay him more money at an earlier stage in his career. And like, when I learned more about it, I'm like, fuck, that's genius. Like, he wouldn't have had to get creative if he didn't have these limitations already set on him. And I think that's a very big deal. Like, when there are limitations, it leads to more creativity.
100%. Like, I just think that, like, some people look at those limits and rules as, you know, hurdles that just stifle creativity. But the attitude really should be, okay, everyone's dealing with this.
Yeah.
If you work out a way to, you know, circumnavigate it, you're going to do very well. So it's more of an opportunity.
Yeah. I gotta give it to you. That's, when explained like that, that is probably the first time the political correctness stuff has been explained to me, and it's made me go, that actually clicks.
I've got jokes around the Holocaust, survivors being the grandson of Holocaust survivors.
Mm.
And it's politically incorrect to talk about the Holocaust in the context of stand-up comedy.
Mm.
Everyone would say that's a politically incorrect starting position.
Yeah.
So, but I'm still doing the jokes. I'm just finding a way to do them that still gives people the opportunity to laugh and feel comfortable laughing at it. So, you know, if I do a joke about a Holocaust survivor walking out of my show, the joke is me feeling so ashamed that this lady could endure the Holocaust but couldn't endure my comedy.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm talking about a Holocaust survivor, which is very politically incorrect, but I'm clearly making fun of myself in that joke.
Yeah.
And as a result, the audience laughs because they're like, oh, he's... And so there's a bit of... The reason why that joke gets a good pop in the show is because there's a lot of tension in the room when you start talking about the Holocaust survivor.
Yes.
And the other reason that tension exists is because of political correctness. So you cradle this tension in the room. But if you can release that tension, you get a huge laugh.
Mm.
So without political correctness, I wouldn't even have that tension existing in the room. And as a result, I wouldn't get a big laugh.
That makes total sense.
Does it make total sense?
That's like, I feel like I'm getting like theory around comedy here. But
about this all the time. I said it in the room tonight that I do a joke about, you know, people being worried about a small percentage of Muslims being dangerous, and they're the same people who still send their kids to Catholic school. That's a very politically incorrect statement to say. Making a joke about, you know, I'm making a joke about institutional sex offenders, right? But and that creates a lot of tension in the room because all of a sudden you brought up that topic and I'm like, oh fuck, where's this gonna go? And I even say that, I'm like, it's pretty tense right now, isn't it? And everyone, and just saying that, everyone's like, yeah, fuck, it's tense. But then I get a really big laugh when I explain like my thinking around it. And the only reason you get that big laugh is because everyone was so tense at the start before.
So you're, like, outside of being a comedian, you're just very skilled in teasing people. You're kind of daddy. Like, there's an element to that, right?
My favourite thing in comedy is when you say something and you know everyone's real tense.
Yeah.
But then you get them to laugh nonetheless.
And brilliant.
That's my favourite thing in comedy.
Brilliant.
And I think I only started doing that after I had to do my cancer show, like, 2 years ago. Because I had to do a show about getting cancer because it was my entire life experience.
Yeah.
So the whole that whole show was tense.
Yeah.
That whole show is just cancer, cancer, cancer. The whole show is about death and dying and all that shit. And so it's like, well, there was so much tension in that room, so I just had to learn how to break tension.
And it's like, the more tension there is, the bigger potential payoff.
The bigger the chance there is for it to bomb and be awful. Let's not forget, there's a huge risk. You could bomb, people could get offended, people get very upset, and that's the risk you take, but then you also have the chance of a huge laugh as well. So it's just like risky comedy.
I've got to bring it up. It's like it's not an elephant in the room, but it is something I'm just very curious to know about. It's like this whole living with one testicle thing.
I was like, I actually don't know where this question is going. You're like, you gotta bring it up. What are you gonna bring up?
I could see the concern in your face.
What do you know? Do you want a slideshow? What can I do? What can I answer?
For me personally, like, I
just enjoy having two. So all I've really known.
I'm very familiar with both of my testicles.
Yes, 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 yes.
And if I was to lose one, I feel like I would lose part of myself.
Oh, really?
I'm very connected to my balls.
Yeah.
And I
throw connective tissue and cells and stuff.
But
yeah.
I don't mean that in like, I know that sounds funny, but on like an emotional level. I don't know why. It's interesting. Maybe it's a maybe it's an insecurity thing. It's like, well, these are my testicles. This is what I, this is me. And I've been complimented on my testicles. So it's like, well.
I don't want to lose that nice feedback that I'm getting.
And I'm not, I'm also not saying this to make you feel bad. But
no,
like,
no, it doesn't at all.
But like, that, pure physical.
Yeah.
Did the pure physical thing bother you?
No, not at all. But I'm probably saying that from someone who's been in a long-term relationship like his whole life. So if I was a young guy who was out in the town and, single and, meeting women and stuff, then I think it would be something I would think about and it might affect my life.
Sure.
But, yeah, fortunately, I've just got a long-term girlfriend, so, we're kind of stuck together anyway. So she just has to get used to me having one testicle. My view has always been, I tried to write a comedy around this, but my view has always been that the male genitals are truly the most disgusting part of the male anatomy.
Okay.
So really, less is more down there, in my opinion. Personally, I would like to get rid of everything, but doctors say that's really bad. So I've never felt like I've missed anything by losing a testicle. Mm. I think a lot of men define their masculinity through their genitals, because of social constructs and stuff like that.
Mm.
But I think there's a lot more to masculinity than your penis and testicles. And I think when you realize that, it's very liberating.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So I only find it funny when, because there's so many turns of phrase around balls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this guy's got big balls or something. Like if someone says that to me, they'll accidentally be like, oh, I mean, one, well, you got big balls, Yeah. Does that answer your question?
No, it does. It does answer my question. I think you answered it when you said there's more to masculinity than the physical.
Yes, I think, would like to think so. Yeah.
I think that's. That's very mature. When crisis hits, in any shape or form, whether it's like you get out of a relationship or you have cancer or any type of life changing situation, that's when there's a lot of opportunity to grow and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm.
In what ways do you feel like, it's a pretty deep question, but in what ways do you feel like you grew from the two times that you had cancer?
I remind myself that I've been through some awful, awful, awful traumatic times in my life.
Mm.
And as a result, I should not be upset by small things.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I can draw more recent examples, but tonight it wasn't a sold out show. I still had some tickets to sell.
Okay.
But I'm I was a bit like, ugh, that's annoying, I don't really want to sell it out.
Fair.
And then it's like, who gives a shit? I'm not dead. I'm on stage doing a show and people laughing and having a good time.
Exactly.
It's insane for me to be thinking, ugh,
so
wish I had another 20 people in the room. That's an insane and incredibly short-sighted, thing to think.
Mm.
And I catch myself with those thoughts.
Yes.
Now I think I'm much better at catching myself with those dumb thoughts and just being reminding myself, you could so easily be dead, and this could be so, you could not even have the strength to get out of bed to do comedy. So that's been useful, I think, for sure.
That's powerful, and I think that's quite a big takeaway from it. I as you were saying that, my friend whose dad passed recently came to mind. He passed of cancer. And something I noticed about him, he's been my friend for quite a while, one of my best friends. Something I noticed about him was that his perspective on the small stuff changed. Whereas, say,
interesting,
several years ago, he used to, certain things used to be a bigger deal, you got a date with a girl and she cancels on you and then that ruins his week kind of thing. Whereas now it's he's a lot more maybe relaxed about life because he's experienced these periods where there was no relaxation. So it's just by perspective or contrast of the good or the big deals and the not so big deals.
Yeah, I mean suffering is just a part of, living, and a lot of people don't go through traumatic things in their lives. Good for them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of growth that happens.
Mm.
A lot of changes that happen, when you do go through that. Again, I don't think I had a major change in my attitude or my life choices or anything.
Yeah.
But it is just a it's nice to just constantly remind myself, like, to be grateful to for the little things, for the little wins, just to, you know, there were days where I couldn't eat. So the chemo was so bad, I was just couldn't eat. So now I'm like, sit down to eat a nice meal, I'm like, oh fuck, this is good shit. Like, you know what I mean? It's like I'm eating a steak, I'm like, fuck, this is great.
Yeah.
Like, just that kind of stuff is it's nice to, again, I'm not like some Zen, like, you know, monk, but it's something that I think about all the time during the day.
Amazing. I have a lot of respect for that.
So me and my girlfriend went to go to service for a week for a holiday.
Nice.
And I was like, well, while I'm there, maybe I'll do a show in Brisbane.
Sure.
And boy, is she not happy about that.
Does she come to your shows?
Well, she's coming on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Because, like, her cousins are coming. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, oh, I'll go with my cousins, hang out.
Yeah.
But like, I don't like her coming to the shows.
Okay.
She doesn't like comedy.
Okay.
She's, I like getting her opinion on myself, but I try to keep her and my comedy kind of separate.
It's the reason why I ask, because I find that very interesting, is I've started seeing a girl who I really like, but I think a big reason why I like her is she's very different to me, and she doesn't give a shit about social media.
Great.
And that's almost like relieving, because at least in the part, like, since I've been doing like the YouTube stuff, the girls that I've seen have like looked up to it, whereas her name's, she's an archaeologist, she does not give a fuck. She cares about she has bones, a healthy, and fossils.
She has a healthy disdain towards the shit that you do.
Almost.
And I think that's important in a relationship.
Almost, yeah. Oh, I didn't know, but apparently it's great. And it just, it's like, all right, well, this is my thing, and she does her thing, and
I think that's really good, because I think when you're both talking about the same shit all the time, and also, like, I was like, Amanda, like, I'll tell Amanda about, like, something that's happening, you know, in my comedy career or whatever, and I'm, like, complaining about something, and she's like, this doesn't fucking matter.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
she'll bring it down to earth, because, like, you can get lost, not lost, but you can get caught up in
absolutely. She's like a normal human being, and she's like, yeah. And she's like, well, I don't think this matters, so this doesn't matter.
Yes.
Whereas, like, a comedian would be like, oh, yeah, this is the biggest fucking deal ever, you got to deal with this. But she's like, this doesn't matter, just fucking move on with your fucking life.
Mm.
That perspective is really useful. So her being outside of the comedy world and having a healthy disdain towards it, I think is really good for the relationship. You should stick with this girl. Stick with this archaeologist.
I'm going to see how this goes, but it's exciting because it's different. Let's do a selfie.
I hope it goes well, mate.
Thank you, man. That was a pleasure.
Thank you for the lift.
Ah, anytime.
Let me know when this comes out.
Yeah, I'll shoot you a message. It'll be in the coming weeks. This was actually filmed back in April. Sorry for the delay, Michael. I think the thing that impresses me the most about Michael is his work ethic and perseverance. Regardless of the limitations that he encounters, he doesn't allow them to get in the way of his creativity. In fact, he uses limitations, like political correctness in comedy, to his advantage. The man gigs every night and works on mastering his craft. To me, that's what it's all about. See you next time.